to, oh my goodness, episode 49 of Abbott and Costello Meet the Podcast, one that we are calling Two Fives for a Ten. I'm Jerry Shario, and it is always my pleasure to introduce to you the host of our little excursion into the realm of classic cinema. You know that guy who sits behind you in the movie theater, kicking the back of your chair and slurping his drink and munching on his popcorn loud enough to drown out the soundtrack? That's not this guy. Here's Nick Santamaria.
You bet it's not this guy, because I don't think I've been to the movies in 6 months, you know?
Yep.
If I do those things, I have to send a proxy to go and sit in the seat and pretend he's me. And he would do the kicking and the slurping and
nice.
You know. Yeah. But anyway, let's face it. Movie going is not a regular thing anymore. My sister and I were recently talking about the fact that we went to the movies every single week, at least once a week. And it was a ritual and something we loved to do. But you know what? When it was time to let go of it, which, you know, people are still holding on. People are still going to big theaters to see movies, you know, I'm going to say occasionally, because it's not a regular thing. But I've gotten used to streaming. I've gotten used to, you know, finding movies on my system and watching them on my own and not having to worry about people looking at their phones or Pepsi commercials before the movie or any of that stuff. They've taken the joy out of movie going.
Yeah.
Wait, listen to this. This is like, you know, you make a harmless joke and look at what I turned it into. I turned it into a congressional, you know, meeting. I'm sorry about that, but I do feel
no
that
problem.
Way. You know, they've taken away that joy that we enjoyed, you know.
Yep.
And when I think about when I was a kid and how many times I got thrown out of our local movie theater, you would think they'd have my picture in the lobby, you know, with a line through it. But we used to finish up our large popcorn and then fill the box with water and have water fights in the theater. Seriously, you know, and this was last week. So we were kids and we were just crazy. You know, we learned where the exit door was because we were thrown through it quite often. How about you, Jerry? Were you a big time moviegoer when you were a kid?
Oh, exceptionally so. We had a gorgeous little cinema downtown. I grew up in a suburb of Boston and walking distance, you know, at one point. I was old enough to be left up to my own devices, and I'd walk downtown to go catch a double feature, usually. I vividly recall my family was all going to go to the next town over to see one of the first run of Sound of Music.
Wow.
And I opted out of that because our downtown was showing a double feature of King Kong versus Godzilla and The Shakiest Gun in the West. Why now, would I want to...
I'm going to point something out here. He was not shaky until Godzilla and King Kong started fighting. That caused major vibrations.
And oh, I'm sure.
I got to tell you, I saw King Kong versus Godzilla at my local theater when I was, what, 4 or 5 years old?
Yeah.
And I remember as I was walking out, I looked at the poster and I said, the poster is more exciting than the movie was. And it was.
Can't argue. Can't
Kong
argue.
Like wrecking trains and this and that. None of it happened in the movie.
No.
There were just two guys in goofy costumes jumping around.
I do have to say, now here in Spokane, we've got a retro cinema. I don't know what they call them anymore. But
a revival house.
Revival house. There we go. $5 a ticket. Or you can get a movie pass for the year, and it'll cost you $5. And every Sunday they do a movie pass feature. So you get, so spend $5 and every week you can go see a movie. And they do stuff like coming up. I'm going to date this broadcast now. Coming up in next month, they're showing the first 3 Star Wars movies.
Wow.
You know, the good ones, you know?
Yeah.
Back to back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Back to back. $25 for the day. And there you go. So,
That's
my wife and I are going to be there.
You go, boy. Oh, my God. Yeah. You don't see that very often.
No, but that really helps. You know, we've got a couple of huge multiplex things here in town, but this one, it feels so much better to go mm-hmm. there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was just looking at an ad for the New Beverly Cinema in Hollywood, California, where mm-hmm. I used to go I went for 35 years. But recently, their new schedule for April, they're doing a festival of films directed by William Bodine. Now, for those of you who are, you know, extreme movie buffs, you know that William Bodine was known as William One-Shot Bodine. And he did movies like, you know, Bela Lugosi meets the Brooklyn Gorilla and most of the Bowery Boys movies and, you know, things like that. But the thing about Bill Bodine is that he started out in the silent days doing A pictures, like with Mary Pickford and, I mean, really, really great films. And then he decided to go to Europe and work, just on a whim, really. Mm-hmm. And he lost all his footing. He got back and he couldn't get back on track, and he ended up doing Poverty Row for the rest of his life. But he was one of the best Poverty Row directors of all time. So I love Bill Bodine, and I wish I was there to support this. It's all Quentin Tarantino. He bought the theater. Yeah. So you're going to see some stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Even Abbott and Costello. At the Vista Theater in Los Angeles, they just showed Whodunit in a morning on 10 o'clock, 10 a.m. at the movie theater. So you could bring the kids and stuff. Yeah. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So why are we calling this 2 5s for a 10, Jerry? I'm confused here.
Well, because you and me, that's the two. Mm-hmm. We have each chosen what we consider to be our top 5 favorite Abbott and Costello movies. That's the mm-hmm. 5. Right. And you promised me $10 for recording this one. So there's the 10.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute. I'm calling my accountant. Hold on.
See, it's moments like this that I wish this was a video podcast, because the look on your face just then.
$10? Are you kidding?
But anyway, 2 5s for a 10. There we go.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes perfect sense. So, okay, yeah, this is how we're going to do this, folks. I'm going to be honest with you. This was a rough week. For whatever reason, it's just been a rough week for me. And I know Jerry's been dealing with home renovations and lots of noise and things like that. So what we did was we chose a topic that we can just discuss without doing miles of, you know, research and all this stuff. Because last podcast, number 48, I did about 3 days worth of research. I had pages and pages, and I think I looked at 2. The entire time. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't want to do this again. I'm sorry. I don't want to work this hard. But I did get a correction from one of our many people. And this is one I wanted to address. You have to understand that sometimes, you know, I'll read something and it'll be stuck in my head and I'll consider it a fact. And maybe I should have researched before I did this, but it just seemed right. I had always heard that Hell's a Poppin' on Broadway was the longest running musical comedy until Fiddler on the Roof. I think it was 1971. It turns out that I was wrong. There were not several, but there were a few along the way that also mm-hmm. reached that 1,400 performances. Things like South Pacific, one of the most boring musicals ever written. How they got 1,400, I don't know.
I've done it twice. I agree with you on that.
Oh, yes. My God. Oh, my. Who did you play? Were you one of the sailors?
I was Billis.
Oh, Billis, okay. So you did the stomach thing.
Yep. Yep. So much fun.
Yeah. That character does the thing with the muscle, with his ab muscles, to the rhythm of the song that they're doing. Mm-hmm. What is it? Honey Bun? I think it's Honey Bun. Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, it's a boring musical.
But anyway,
moving on. But I was wrong about that. I apologize. And to be honest with you, I like your corrections. If I'm wrong about something, I'm not a goofball about it. I take it and I think, oh, good. I'm glad I know that now. So feel free to make any corrections or whatever, because, you know, Jerry's usually wrong. So what we're doing is we are taking the five favorites from Jerry and the five favorites of mine. Jerry's going to give you his number five first. I'm going to follow up with my number five. And we're going to go from there. Of the 4, 4, 3, 3, 2, 2, 1, 1. And that's that. So that's 2 5s for 10. So, Jerry, I'm going to hand the ball over to you to start out. And we're going to discuss this choice of yours. And why you chose Lost in Alaska is beyond me. I just don't get it. One of my wise guy friends on Facebook said, I can't wait to hear your dissertation on Lost in Alaska. every crevice, every nuance.
The feeling within me is that if we had chosen our top 40 favorite Abbott and Costello films, Lost in Alaska still wouldn't have made my list. So
you would have froze it out.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. Number five on my favorites list has got to be Here Come the Coeds.
Ooh.
And I should have said this before I started, but I just want to remind people that, as Nick said, we're not doing a whole lot on this. It's opinions and why we like things. Full information on every one of these movies. Just go back, listen to the podcast, because we covered every single one of these movies, and Nick did extensive research on each and every one of them. And so maybe you can find something else to correct him about.
Just stay away from my book. That's all. It's definitive.
Okay, so that being said, Here Come the Coens, my number five on my favorites list, partially because one of the keys for me for a good Abbott and Costello film is not a lot of other things happening. I mean, we've talked about this in the past. The Andrews Sisters, I adore the Andrews Sisters. Love their songs. The music in general in a lot of their films. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm watching these movies, however, to watch Abbott and Costello.
Yes.
And so in my list, you're going to find a lot of them that don't have a whole lot of other stuff. And that's the reason why. Here Come the Coeds, one of my favorites because of that. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that they get to work opposite Lon Chaney Jr. Such a way that he just becomes this mountain of an imposition in their lives. Yeah, mostly in Lou's life.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. And so a lot of the stuff that the scenes that he's involved with, fantastic. Some of the physical stuff in this movie is incredible. Lou in the kitchen, trying to clean the kitchen. That alone is enough to credit this movie as being a favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And then the climax, the basketball game. Lou's dexterity on the court. I will admit, when I first saw this movie as a kid, even then, my first thought was, how did they shoot that? How did they rig that? How did they get that ball to go where they wanted it to? Then I learned a little bit more about Lou Costello, and they didn't have to worry about that.
The world's shortest basketball pro.
Yes.
You know, seriously, he was incredible.
And so, yeah, it's just overall, the entire package, well put together, and it just keeps moving, and it's always enjoyable, and I love me some Lon Chaney Jr.
Oh, man, I don't blame you. They used him for the first time in this movie, and of course, he came back as the Wolfman in Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. But I couldn't agree more about this movie, and this movie also has... We talked about it in the podcast. Phil Spitalny and his all-girl orchestra featuring Evelyn and her magic violin. Now, this movie surprised me when I first saw it. I just want to explain real quick. When I was a kid in the New York area, and a lot of our listeners share this same story, they showed Abbott and Costello every Sunday morning at 11:30. In a 90-minute time slot, so we didn't see the entire films, they released a package of all their Universal films. And they weren't always available until then, until that time. So when I was watching them on another local network, the WOR, and this was in the early days, I didn't see a lot of the movies. They just kind of ran the same ones over and over again. Mm-hmm. When I saw Here Come the Coeds, I remember being a little disappointed because there was a lot of music in this short time slot. Now, I'm talking about the cut down version that I grew up
with.
They kept the musical stuff in and got rid of the Abbott and Costello stuff. So I'm thinking, oh my God, what is this? It's not an Abbott and Costello movie. It's a Phil Spitalny movie, you know, with a guest appearance by Bud and Lou. So I was a little disappointed by that until I saw the entire film. Mm-hmm. And then I realized just how good it was and how well they were featured. Mm-hmm. Again, you're so right about the basketball finale. Him, Lou as Daisy Dimple, you know, being hypnotized into becoming the world's greatest basketball player. Him making those trick shots were just amazing.
Yes.
But we have to remember that Lou, he was put on the spot quite a lot. I mean, even on his This Is Your Life program, they made him do a foul shot. Now, you know, I'm sure he would have hated to miss in front of 90 million people, but he aced it. He aced it. And then when they were in Cuba, and I saw this at the Paley Center in New York, when it was the Museum of Radio and Television, I saw a Steve Allen show from Cuba, and they had Lou doing the basketball, and he made every shot. It was just amazing. I mean, and he's this tiny little guy, this tiny little fat guy, you know, and he could probably run around with the Harlem Globetrotters. But anyway, I really love Here Come the Coeds. It would have been on my list had Jerry not gotten there first. I love the chase with the sailboat when they're in the sailboat. It comes out of nowhere. And it's one of my favorite things. And also the telling the story to the girls in the school.
Yes.
Jonah and the Whale. You were right. We talked about this last time. It's the best version of it. And then there's the musical number with Lou and Patty Ryan.
Yes.
Just wonderful. Let's play house.
Let's play show. Let's not act too suburban. I look well in a turban.
I'll be Boyer.
And I'll be Miss Durbin.
Meet me by the gas pipe.
Let's play school. Let's start out with subtraction. You'll get plenty of action.
I think figures have such an attraction. Let's play school.
Meet me by the gas pipe.
So yeah, I'm with you, Jer. That's one of my favorites too. Great choice.
Yeah.
And I wonder how many people agree with us.
I'm sure we'll find out.
We will find out. Okay, I'm going to give you my number five.
Yes.
And it might surprise you because it's really late in the day. It's Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy. Okay, I'm pausing here for people to faint and restore themselves. Okay. I say that because it was their last film for Universal. It was their penultimate film before Dance With Me, Henry, and then them splitting up. It is so late in the game, yet they are wonderful. They are back. You know, when I was, there's some Marx Brother movies that I can't stand because Groucho is not Groucho. He was directed by Eddie Bazell to ramp up his performance, become more energetic for the kids out there, you know, because the Marx Brothers were like a nostalgia act by 1939. But Groucho wasn't Groucho. But then in The Big Store, after he made At the Circus and Go West with that different character, he was back in The Big Store. So The Big Store is a special movie for me. I really like it. Yeah. I feel that way with Meet the Mummy. The guys showed us that they were losing interest in making these movies for Universal. You could tell their minds were on other things. They were on television and, you know, business ventures, and they were dealing with the IRS and all this stuff. But I have to say, they're back. They're back in this movie. It might as well be 1942. That's how good they are. Yes, Bud is probably heavier than Lou at this point, you know, due to his drinking. And Lou is as energetic as he ever was. They do some wonderful routines. They do pick and shovel. They do the meats on fire, which makes me laugh every time. And also the medallion, eating the medallion.
Yes.
one of my all-time favorite bits. So this is all in their second to last film. I mean, so it has to be on my favorites list. It's just, it's miraculous what they accomplished. They've got one of their best casts, Marie Windsor, Dan Seymour, Michael Ansara, Richard Deacon.
Yes.
Right? As the head of the cult. And I kept waiting for Maury Amsterdam to run in and, you know, insult his bald head.
You're someone only a mummy could love.
But anyway, it is number five on my list. It's Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy.
I have to agree with you. In fact, I'm looking at my notes here. I had just written down a mess of titles and then went back and numbered my top five. And Mummy is on my list. I was, you know, that close to actually putting it into my top five for all those same reasons.
Yeah,
because it was a throwback. It was, oh my gosh, they still have it. It was all of the things that you said. And when we did our favorite routines episode, of course, pick your shovel. Shovel is my pick was one of mine. Because of that, it was like, yes, they still got it. They're here. They're with us. Yes. But for all those same reasons, excellent. And I hate to keep coming back to this. And again, I love the old music, but this one has fewer musical interruptions. Because again, when I see an Abbott and Costello movie, I want to see Abbott and Costello. It just burns my biscuits when the TV does, like you said, you know, hey, we need to cut down the runtime of this movie. We'll take out the comedy.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Check out Jonah and the Whale.
Yeah.
But keep the magic violin. Yeah. It's true. It's so true. Yeah. But you're right about The Mummy. This one does not have a lot of musical stuff. It has an interesting dance, I think.
Number, yes.
You know?
Yeah.
The Egyptian number. And then it has a nice little song by Peggy King. You've come a long way from St. Louis. Really harmless, you know?
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, I agree with you. It does have more Abbott and Costello than we had gotten in a long time. So it was it's right there. It's right there on top. You know, they did a great job. And I have to say, Charlie Lamont did a great job also directing. He kept it moving and really kept it looking nice as well. All of the Universal people. So, so that's my number five.
Okay,
so
then.
I'm anxious to know number four on your
number
list.
Number
four. With your Shario.
My hit parade. Yes. Number four, roughly the same time frame as Here Come the Coeds. My number four pick is In Society.
Ooh, one of my favorites.
Yeah, of course, I'm sure most of our listeners are well aware of the backstory on this movie, the timing in their lives, and when this film was made and what have you. And it's just so well done on so many levels, not the least being they pulled some old routines. They came up with some new routines. They came up with some routines that other people had done forever, and then they did them and did them better. To further explain, actually, before I further explain, another reason this one sticks with me, when I bought my first Super 8 sound movie projector.
Was it a Revere?
No. Actually, it was a Umig.
Oh, yeah. Umig. Those are even better.
Yeah. Oh, spared no expense. The first film that I purchased at the same time was Knights of the Bath, which is the bathroom sequence from In Society, the plumbers at work. And that's what I was referring to, because by this time, everybody and their brother has done some type of plumbing gags, plumbing slapstick. Right. The Stooges did it to death, actually. But there are moments in this scene, in their plumbing escapades, just moments that are pure Bud and Lou and come out of nowhere. As an example, you know, the shower head is busted. The water's squirting out. Bud's got, looks like a pillow, a floor mat that he's holding up against it. And Lou is standing on one side and Bud's telling, you know, go get the wrench. And Lou, instead of getting out of the tub and walking, he goes to Bud and says, excuse me. And Bud takes down the pillow, gets the water right in his face as Lou walks by. And then, you know,
It's little moments like that.
Yeah. Or before it all goes, you know, to heck, the water is spurting up through the drain and, you know, Lou sits on the rim and starts taking off his shoe. Why are you taking off your shoe? I don't want to get my shoes wet. So he takes off his left shoe and then throws his right foot into the tub to get some some pressure against the plunger. You know, things like that.
I love that. I love that.
So that, a song that I can never get out of my head.
No doubt about it.
No doubt about it. Yes, I mean no doubt about it. That song just sticks with you. And it's great. It's a great song. It's well done. But the ultimate, the top of the list for this movie for me is the Susquehanna Hat Company.
Oh, please. It steals the movie.
Yes. If Castle Films had had that segment out at that time, that's what I would have purchased with my new projector.
So you had a sound projector.
But again, yes, I did. I had inherited a silent 8mm from my dad.
Right. Well,
inherited. He gave it to me.
Right.
But of course, I've got to get sound. You know, what's the point of watching some of these films without the sound?
True. Is weird. You know,
yes,
watching a silent
is.
Marx Brothers. I used to have all the Marx Brothers ones. You know, This Is War, Pigskin Capers, you know, and Monkey Business, all of those. And it's so weird watching them do silent comedy, you know, with subtitles. It's weird. It's very strange. But again, I have to agree with you about In Society. And I know what you were bringing up. This was right after Lou's illness and losing his son. And he came back. He came back for this movie, and boy, oh boy. I mean, really, he was back. It wasn't like we were watching this depressed little man. No. We were watching a full-bodied Lou Costello performance, and he's terrific.
Yeah,
I agree with you.
Much, that
song.
In much the same way that the day of, you know, that wonderful radio broadcast of their show was his first broadcast after his illness. The day that his son had that accident. And
that very
day. You listen to that episode, you would never know that anything was going on.
No, that's a pro. That's a real pro. But anyway, that movie, number one, I love No Bad About It. I mean, I love that they do a version of Go Ahead and Sing with the cop and the taxi cab with the horn. I mean, this one's loaded with great routines. The Susquehanna Hat. Now, here's the thing. In our book, The Annotated Abbott and Costello, we had to clean up some of the myths spread by a previous book from about 35 years earlier. And one of those horrible mistakes that book makes is that Lou Costello came in one day and said to the director, I believe it was Gene Yarborough, he said, "We're doing Susquehanna Hat." And he's like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, we're doing Flugel Street." "But Lou, there's no room for it. It doesn't make any sense. You just can't draw." "We're doing it." So Lou got dressed up. He bullied the director. He bullied everyone around him. He got Bud to agree. They went in. They shot it in one take. And that was that. No. You know what? It was in the script. We have the definitive book about Abbott. So there are the annotated Abbott and Costello. Okay, so that's Flugel Street was all part of it, you know, caused all that trouble with Joey Fay, who claimed ownership of it. And I think he got some money out of Universal suing them because he was the latest person to copyright it. So, you know, they had to give him something. But anyway, that's a wonderful moment in Abbott and Costello history. And I love also the chase in this. I really like the chases in Abbott and Costello movies. Nobody does rear projection like they do, reacting to rear projection. Laurel and Hardy were terrible at it, you know?
Yeah.
Hal Roach Studios just couldn't do it. But Abbott and Costello were masters of it. And sometimes it's just as funny as the long shots with the stuntmen, you know? But anyway, I love In Society. I love Marion Hutton. Betty Hutton's sister is really terrific in it. And our villains are great too. We've got Murray Leonard is back, and Thomas Gomez is back. He was in Whodunit.
And how can we not mention Arthur Treacher?
Oh, Arthur Treacher. Oh, he was just Arthur Treacher and Lou Costello. I mean, really, they're terrific. Yep. That's a very funny scene.
Gentlemen, Your boss is drawn.
Erase it.
What?
Rub it out.
Shh, not so loud. My friend is very humorous, too. You've got to take a bath.
Quiet, not so loud. Right?
Quite.
Right.
Well, sir, if I may start undressing you now?
You're going to undress me?
Yes, sir.
The last person that ever undressed me was my mother, and that was a year ago.
A year ago?
You gotta stop to learn undress yourself sometime or other by yourself, don't you?
Right.
Quite.
Right.
It really is good stuff. And then I just wanted to comment quickly on the plumbing scene. It is the most stoogey they ever got was they could have cut it down to a two-reeler and it would have been just as good as what I consider to be the best Stooge short of all time is The Plumbing We Will Go.
Yeah.
It's just perfect. And you've got Dudley Dickerson in it also helping a great deal. But, you know, Abbott and Costello working on the bathroom while poor Thurston Hall is trying to sleep in the next room. It really is terrific, terrific stuff. All right, great choice, Jerry. That's a another winner. But I have
so Nick, yes. What is your number four choice?
Okay, my number four choice is The Music Box. No, wait, wrong team. Hold on. No, it is. Are you ready? It's another unusual one. I didn't want to go like typical. The Noose Hangs High.
Oh,
yes. Their first independent movie and their first movie where it looked like they had complete control over the stuff that went into it, because you had every Abbott and Costello routine you could possibly think of other than Who's on First in this movie. And I treasure it. I treasure it because they're all there. They're all done beautifully well.
And for the most part, every Abbott and Costello routine in one scene.
Right, the restaurant scene. Really great stuff. But this movie, it's a remake of an earlier Universal film from the 1930s called For Love of Money, or was it For Love or Money? I forgot. But anyway, it's a remake. And the boys put the whole thing together as an independent film. They got Charlie Barton to direct. They got a bunch of Universal people to help them make it. And it was made for Eagle Lion Studios, which was what PRC, Producer Releasing Corporation, PRC, was a step below Monogram Studios. So it was really bottom of the barrel almost. Mm. And they became a multicultural company. They became Eagle America, Lion Great Britain. So they were releasing British films in this country, as well as producing their own product. But unfortunately, nothing made money as much as the Abbott and Costello movie did. The News Hangs High, you know, made their typical profits, but they just couldn't sustain that schedule or whatever. But it was their first independent film, and it really, really shows. They've got a wonderful supporting cast. Leon Errol, of all people, who I love. One of the funniest guys in movies. He works so beautifully with Lou, the two of them. And he's an old burlesque guy, you know, from a generation before Bud. Mm-hmm. And that's going back some. So we're talking like turn of the century, you know. So you got Leon Errol, who is just fantastic. You've got Joseph Kalia, who is originally from Malta. And just one of my favorite character actors. Orson Welles loved him and used him beautifully in whatchamacallit. And was it, what's the one with Charlton Heston? You know, we brought this up in another podcast and I forgot the name as well. The one with Orson Welles and Charlton Heston plays a Mexican guy.
Yeah.
Starts with a T.
I'll
there are
find
people
it
all over America listening to this podcast yelling the name at their computers.
So I'll find it later and edit it in right here. So there we go.
Okay, great.
And we'll both sound like we're geniuses.
Yeah, which we are not. not even close. But anyway, this Touch of Evil, thank you.
There we go. See, I don't have to edit it in later.
No, you don't. That, but do it in my voice. If you can make it my voice. Yeah, so we pretend that I thought of it. Touch of Evil. Yeah. I used to call my dentist that. But anyway, Joe Kalea was really top of the line, and it's so good to see good people in an Abbott and Costello movie. You could tell that they produced this one because they actually got an A-list cast. So you had Joe Kalea as our guy, our antagonist, and you've got Kathy Downs, who's as cute as a bug's ear, and it's just terrific. It's just, if you want Abbott and Costello routines and no songs or anything like that, go to The Noose Hangs High. It's like getting a long version of their TV show. Let's put it that way, right? Is that a good assessment, fair assessment?
That is a very fair assessment, yes. And I have to agree with you wholeheartedly again on this one. Growing up in Boston, as I've mentioned, you know, we had Abbott and Costello every Saturday night on one of our local channels. And another of our local UHF stations, see, I say that, and part of our listening audience is going to go, a what? back in the day when there were only three networks, one of our local stations also ran the Edgar Kennedy and Leon Errol shorts. So I was very familiar with both of those guys.
We used to have a show that they would show on WNEW channel 5 late at night whenever their programming ended, and it ended, you know, different times each night. They would show a TV show called Real Camp, R-E-E-L Camp, and it would be Leon Errol, Edgar Kennedy, all the RKO shorts they would show. So I saw a lot of my first stuff there on Real Camp. You made me think of it. I haven't thought about that in years. Seriously. Wow.
But yes, Leon Errol and Lou, just they clicked. It was really nice to watch. And for instance, I always have mixed emotions when Lou and somebody else do one of the standard Abbott and Costello routines.
One of the crosstalk routines.
Because it never quite works the same. There's always something that's just a little off. But when Leon Errol and Lou do Mutter Fodder, it's smooth, it flows, it's perfect. It's just so well done.
I agree. I think they were directed beautifully by Charlie Barton to play that scene. And then there's all the physical stuff going on while they're playing pool, you know?
Yes.
This is really, really neat. So yeah, I have to say, Noose Hangs High is right up there. And that is my number four behind Meet the Mummy.
Alrighty then, moving on.
I have to ask you, Jerry. I really need to ask you something.
Okay.
What would your number three be?
Ooh. I'm going to have to put some thought behind this and maybe get back to you after I turn my head slightly to the right and look at my notes.
I'm ready. fire when ready, Gridley.
Number three on my hit parade is Naughty 90s.
Now, this one is going to surprise people.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Not me.
Because
I would have chosen it if you hadn't first.
And it's not considered to be one of their best by many people. But to me, it depends on how you're ranking them. And as I've already said at least two other times, since I'm on number three right now, my ranking is how much Bud and Lou do I get for my buck? In this one, it's like a greatest hits collection of their stuff. And again, some stuff that others have done, but they do it so much better. Not the least reason being the definitive Who's on First.
Absolutely.
The best ever captured on film Who's on First from these guys.
I totally agree.
And again, fantastic supporting cast. And the concept of having them on a showboat just opened up all kinds of possibilities.
Yes.
I can't remember what title it goes by, but the routine where Lou is wanting to rehearse the song and Bud is yelling directions at the stage crew, you know, bring the left leg up, bring the left leg down.
One of my favorite routines.
Yes.
One of my favorites.
We tried to recreate that one in a Christmas program that I threw together for a nursing home in our neighborhood. We were just a bunch of high school kids. We were going in to do a show to entertain the old folks in the nursing home. And I had one person with, you know, those cardboard Santa figures that are hinged at the shoulders and the elbows and at the knee, you know,
yes. So you can
put it on the wall and tape it up there, however you want it.
We had one when I was growing up.
We had one of those on the back wall. And that's what he, you know, bring the left leg up. No, bring the left leg, raise the right arm.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah, it worked. It worked.
Wow.
And again, the music fits so nicely in this one. And I have to admit, my only negative comment about this is the scene where Bud is on stage doing the sawmill sketch.
Right.
And Lou, there's a baby crying in the house. And Lou, as the stagehand, is trying to quiet the baby. Bud, and forgive me, I just now blanked on the other character's name. You know, Mr. Pinkerton, whatever, the villain. You know, he's trying to plead with the villain in this scene. And for most of this scene, all he says is, Mr. Pinkerton, Mr. Pinkerton, Mr. Pinkerton. They couldn't have given him something else.
Maybe had he read the script, he might have, you know, picked up on something. Might have gotten a clue.
Lou trying to deal with the baby, you know, threatening the kid with a gun. I'll shoot you.
That's my favorite part. I'll shoot you. I'll shoot you. I love that moment.
Yeah, there's just so many other things. I won't bother. Again, go back to episode whatever it was where we discussed the naughty 90s to get all the details. But yeah.
Right. I imagine that would be like number 9 or something. You know,
around there,
I don't want to say it, but you know, don't take my word for it. But when I saw that Naughty 90s was coming up that Sunday morning, I was excited all week because I love that movie. Not only do I love the fact that it's their first real period piece.
Yeah.
And they really fit into it beautifully. I love the whole background of the showboat. Mm-hmm. I love all the opportunities that opens up. It opens up the, you know, his singing routine with Bud. You know, you couldn't do that in every one of their movies. This is the perfect showcase for it. They also, like you say, it's the greatest version of Who's on First. And, you know, I love the fact that you could hear the cameraman laughing. I mean, how often does that happen in a mainstream film? And it wasn't even, you know, they shot that in two different time periods, you know, it was glued together, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it works like a charm. I love the feathers, the potholder and the cake with the feathers flying. And like you say, Jerry, other people have done that, but nobody did it with quite the same humor, the same charm as Bud and Lou. And I loved Sam McDaniel, Hattie McDaniel's brother. Is just great with Lou. The two of them work very well together.
Yeah.
And you got, what's her name? Rita Wilson? Is that her name? The villainess? Oh my God. I used to have such a crush on her. And she's very sexy. You know, it's like, be mean to me. It's okay. You could be mean to me. She's really beautiful. Yep. And you've got Joe Sawyer, who is just out of control in this movie, having the time of his life. He's so silly in this movie. And he's a villain, you know? He's a silly villain. And then you've got, what's his name? Alan Curtis as the, Alan Curtis.
I think so. Yep.
Yeah, who was kind of out on his way out at this point. He was just a little too hard to handle. But again, you've got so many great routines in this movie. You've got them at the roulette wheel doing you know, their money routines. You've got some great stuff of them just trying to sneak into the gambling casino with Jack Norton as the drunk. I mean, there are definitely wonderful moments in this. I even like the music in this one, you know, the period. Songs that they actually were from the turn of the century. So I really like that. I really love this movie. I think it's very underrated as far as their films are concerned. And if you haven't seen it recently, I really would give it a chance. There's a lot to recommend to it. And the final chase with Joe Sawyer around the boat is just a riot. It's just hilarious. And you've got Clarence the Angel in the movie. What more do you want? Right? You've got Henry Travers.
Yep.
Wonderful stuff. So, Jerry, great choice.
Great choice. Oh. I just want to say you've chosen three that I normally would put on my list. You know what I mean? But I avoided it because you chose them first. But that's good because it opens up. It opens stuff up.
I'm glad I got to go first then.
Yeah, right.
So tell me, Nick, what is your number three choice?
My number three choice is the rib special with the salad. And, the Abbott Costello movies. All right. I would say, and this is really, I consider this one of the funniest, not only one of the funniest Abbott and Costello movies, but one of my favorite funny movies of all time. And that's Pardon My Sarong.
Oh.
It is just, to me, you've got more Abbott and Costello in this movie at this point than you have had up to this point. Yep. And despite the fact that there are probably more musical numbers in this movie than maybe any of their others, the comedy is so strong and so sustainable that you really don't mind. You really don't care. And if it's a long number, you can get up, make a sandwich, and come back. It'll be over by the time you get back. And they also have this little button on your remote that it says FF. That's not a dirty thing. Right? This is fast forward. So you press that and, you know, watch them in fast motion and you get to another great Abbott and Costello routine. This one is notorious for the Bud handing Lou the gun to commit suicide.
Yes.
Am I allowed to say suicide on a podcast? I don't know anymore.
Too late. You already did.
I did, didn't I?
Yep.
Okay. No, I was sitting by the sewer side and there were a few rats that came out and, you know,
speaking of classic songs, I remember that one, Down by the Sewer Side.
Down by the sewer side.
Anyway.
Now everybody just turned off the podcast. Thanks for watching. Oh, no, they're singing again. No, but I like vintage music. I just do. I know I'm not a rock and roller. I was talking to my sister the other day. She loves Bob Dylan. And I'm like, you know, a day without hearing Bob Dylan is a very happy day for me. I just can't say, but anyway, but Pardon My Sarong, it's got some really, really great music. It's got the four Ink Spots singing two of their hits. It's got Tip, Tap, and Toe doing some of the best tapping you're going to see in a movie. Seriously. You've got beautiful Nan Nguyen singing a song about how beautiful she is. I always got a kick out of that because she's singing a song about herself. Lovely Luana. La, da, 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 da. You know, and it's like nobody looks down on her for it. It's just she's got a healthy opinion. She's also one of the more gorgeous people you're going to see in a movie. I love the fact that the chase scene is probably as good as anything Max Sennett ever did. It's them running through the jungle with all the villains chasing them and all the different sight gags and all the different special effects. It's just fabulous. And then going after Lionel Atwill in the boat, you know, and Sharky the Seal taking him there and him getting connected to the outboard motor. It's just it's just wonderful. It's just a wonderful movie. And, you know, here's these guys. They're bus drivers and they get into more trouble. I love the whole backstage stuff with William Demarest, the magician stuff, Marco the Magician. I can go on and on and on. And you talk about the pantomime from In Society and the plumbing scene.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, Lou does stuff while the boat is in a storm. He's trying to shave and the mirror keeps sliding back and forth. And he has to, like, every time the mirror slides past him, he does another stroke of the razor on it. On his face. And it's just classic pantomime, you know, by Lou Costello. It's just fantastic. And Bud is very funny in this one. You know, you have to address the elephant in the room when he hands Lou the gun.
Yeah.
Now, even when I was a kid, I knew that he was trying to do something nice. He was trying to end Lou's suffering because starving takes such a long time and it's a painful process. And he was just trying to, you know, lessen the load, I guess.
Yes.
And this has become such a bone of contention about Bud's character in general, how cruel he could be, how thoughtless he could be about his friend. And I'll have to agree. I'm going to say that that is a black mark in their film characters by having Bud do this. And it goes right in line with in Jack and the Beanstalk when he turns around and he makes that gesture like, the hell with him, you know, and keeps running. Bud did stuff like that. They wrote that into his character. And I just thought it was a bad move. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking Bud should have done something about it. Bud should have said something. You know, he was a partner. He should have said something. But anyway, I have to say, Pardon My Sarong is one of the funniest movies of the 1940s. And it's no coincidence that it was produced by the same independent company, Mayfair, that made Hell's a Poppin'. Mm-hmm. So Jules Levy, the head of that company, really knew comedy and really knew what he liked. And it just happened to be what I like. So what do you think, Jerry? Pardon My Sarong, huh?
It's on my short list for the top five. For all the reasons you've stated, an incredible chase scene. I remember when we did this episode, the Pardon My Sarong episode, we spent some time talking about that wonderful moment before Lou gets sent up to the temple to be the sacrifice.
Oh, I love
this. Bud gives him back the dollar that he owes him.
At that moment. Now you're giving me the dollar. And then he turns to the native and starts talking to him as if the native knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
It's just, it's why I love him.
But also, I don't have documentation on this, but I believe the second Castle Films Super 8 Sound Abbott and Costello that I ever purchased was, and now I'm blanking on the title of what they called it, but it was the beginning of this film with the bus and then William Demarest and Marco the Magician. And then it ends with the go ahead and back up.
Oh,
and
boy.
They go off into the bay or wherever it
into was. Into the drink.
Yeah.
That beautiful bus model, you know, yes. The miniature. Yeah. And it looks great.
It was very well done, yes.
Well, they had a great miniature department at Universal. Really great stuff.
The magician stuff in the theater, the chase through the theater with William Demarest, and then both of them posing as Marco.
The McGicken.
And it was just so well done. That scene was so well written. You know, it followed all the rules of comedy, and it just clicked. It worked perfectly. He first meets the actual Marco. Then he meets Bud trying to be Marco, who is actually making an effort.
Yes.
He's trying to speak only French to this cop, even though all he can say is oui.
And au revoir.
Yeah. And then Lou comes out as Marco, and it just all goes to hell right there.
It's every man for himself. But I have to give credit. I really want to give kudos to Bud in this scene because he's very funny. When people say that Bud is really funny, this is what you have to watch. You know what I mean? Because he really comes out and he owns it with the French accent and everything. Au revoir, au revoir. He was very good. Yeah, that's great. I didn't know that existed, the Castle film.
Yeah. It's like Take Bus, Pay Later or some stupid
title. You just said it. Okay. That's what it is. Take Bus, Pay Later. Yeah, yeah. I should have known that's what it was. But what did I have? I didn't have any sound ones. I had silent versions. I had Ride 'em Cowboy, No Bulls, Please from Mexican Hayride. And a few more, you know, Have Badge, Will Chase from Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
I had a bunch of them. There was another one, Double Cross at Crisscross. And that was, I believe, Wistful Widow, Wagon Gap.
Yeah.
So, they came up with these imaginative titles at Castle Films. Can you imagine who was in charge? It's like, hey, Murray, we're going to have to, you know, do a title for this one.
How about No Bananas, Please?
Yeah, that's good. That's clever. All right, that's good. And by the way, you're fired. So
it looks like they spent more time on the artwork on the box than coming up with the titles for these highlight films.
Yeah. Oh, and I also had No Indians, Please from Riding Cowboy. I had the beginning of Riding Cowboy and the ending of Riding Cowboy, and the middle is completely missing. Kind of like the real movie. Oops. Not one of my favorites. Okay, so Jerry, you know, last night I was up quite a lot, and I had one thing on my mind the entire time, and it kept me from sleeping, honest to God.
And
I had to know what your number two pick is.
Ooh. Such responsibility you're putting on my shoulders here. Oh my goodness. Well,
I sound like Frank McHugh. Ha ha ha.
Okay, my number two. This might come as a surprise to some people, but my number two all-time favorite Abbott and Costello movie is kind of a period piece as well.
Ah.
It's Time of Their Lives.
Oh, a beautiful movie.
It is a gorgeous movie.
It is.
Just from step one, the whole concept, the storyline, the way they play it, it's just, I hesitate to call any movie a perfect movie, but this one comes awfully close.
It is close to being near perfect.
Yeah.
Near perfect. Yeah, I agree.
You've got the, well, first of all, the whole concept of the two of them not working as partners.
Right.
And looking back on it, I get the impression that maybe they, you know, Universal wasn't 100% sure about this, because in the first part of the movie, when we're back in colonial America, they do work together. They do kind of work off each other a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then it all happens. We now have two spirits in the well. And then, you know, all bets are off from there.
They're unwell.
But yes. But watching Lou, and oh my gosh, I feel so ill prepared right now. The leading lady.
Oh, Marjorie Reynolds.
Marjorie Reynolds, thank you. I just blanked on her name there.
Cute.
Lou and Marjorie Reynolds just click. They work so well together. And the relationship is genuine, almost to the point. When they do the gag of the two of them running across the room toward each other, they go through each other and change clothes.
I love that.
That almost seems like an imposition, because their relationship up to that point was so wonderful and so, you know, like older sister, younger brother kind of thing, you know?
Right.
And then we get this gag. Don't get me wrong. It's a great gag.
Oh, it's one of the best. It's one of the best in the movie, you know? I love it.
And talking about Bud, if you had any questions about just his acting ability, this movie is a beautiful example of just how good he was.
And how funny he was.
Yeah. As the psychiatrist, he's desperately trying to understand, first of all, figure out this whole ghost thing. Is this real? Am I hallucinating? And then why me? Why are they angry at me? What did I ever do?
I love when he's upstairs talking to himself.
Yeah, stay calm.
Yeah, that's wonderful. As he's taking pills, you know,
he's
wonderful. He really is, truly wonderful. And from what I read, it was his favorite performance of his, and I don't blame him.
Rightly so. Yes, the special effects again are marvelous in this. Everything from the ghosts dematerializing and materializing, the changing of the costumes, and. One who always tries to figure out, how did they do that? The section where they're trying to drive off the grounds. You know, Bud has been arrested. He's in the backseat with Donald McBride. And Lou gets in the car.
Right.
So they can't leave the grounds. But it just looks so well done. The car goes through the gate at a good clip, it seems like. And then literally bounces back again.
Yes.
It's so well done.
And do you remember what I told you during the episode, how they actually manipulated the car? Okay, you didn't see anyone driving. Bud and Donald McBride were in the back seat.
Yep.
And supposedly the ghost, Lou's as the ghost, was driving. There was a guy, a Universal technician, probably on John Fulton's crew. He was responsible for all the special effects. He did the Invisible Man, John Fulton, a genius. He had the guy underneath the seats, laying down with his feet towards the engine. And he was working a wheel that was all the way back as he was laying down. This was all underneath the seats.
Wow.
So, yeah. So they went all out to, like, create this car to fit this guy, this, you know, full-grown guy, and then have him drive from a laying down position. So, yeah, it was pretty brilliant. Pretty brilliant.
And it holds a couple of places, you know, being really the best of the two non-team movies. that they
did. Yes.
You know, yes. Better than, I love better Little, than Giant. Little Giant. Yeah, but this one works better for me.
Yes, for me too.
And growing up in Boston, I have to confess, you know, the colonial thing grabbed me right at the beginning.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, just literally no interruptions in this one. It's
again, a near perfect film.
Yeah. Binnie Barnes, oh my gosh.
Oh, she's so good, Binnie Barnes. And Donald McBride is hilarious. And, you know, and God, I have to just keep, Gail Sondergaard as the maid. She is just wonderful. Melody, melody. When you see it coming out of her, you know,
you know
you're in for a treat.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here for my final point. In my opinion, the best final beat of an Abbott and Costello movie.
It's beautiful.
The gag that they go out on just could not be better.
It's beautiful. It's just beautiful. And I'm thinking to myself, as we're discussing this movie, I don't think any of the other comedy teams, and I'm talking about Laurel and Hardy and Martin and Lewis, I don't think either one of them ever made a movie as good as this.
Mm.
I'm sorry. They've made some wonderful movies, but none as good as this. And I can say that about a few Abbott and Costello movies. So I can't agree with you anymore. It is just a wonderful film. It was made as an experiment to try and lift the profits again, because they had, they had released 9,000 Abbott and Costello films to the public up to this point, and they were getting a little tired. So yeah, I can understand why they took such a left turn and really tried some other stuff. Now, I could see how Little Giant might turn people off a little bit. It's very sentimental. There's serious spots to it, you know, whatever. Yeah. People who don't like pathos, you know, tend to talk down about it. I like it. I think it's an excellent film. But this one improved on those points. It's still got some sentiment to it. The ending where they say goodbye, where Melody and Lou say goodbye, it makes you cry. It's a really sweet moment. Yeah. And then the special effects as he's walking up to heaven with the stars, you know, it's beautiful. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
The score, the musical score is just gorgeous. The cast, number one, A1, they're just fantastic. No weak links at all. The script is near perfect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, and they even kind of fit a tiny little chase in at the end with the car.
Yeah.
With Bud in the back. He's handcuffed and he's bouncing around in the back seat. And then when the car hits the tree and Bud goes flying out of the car, that's pretty cool.
Yes. Something I hadn't thought about till just now. Little Giant gives the impression of being a Lou Costello movie that Bud Abbott was in. Time of Their Lives is an ensemble piece.
Yes.
Really, no one person stands out in this.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I mean, it is. You're right. You're right.
Yeah.
That's the
difference.
Yeah. No, here's what's brilliant about this movie. You do have Lou with a new partner.
Yes.
It's Lou with Marjorie Reynolds. And they work beautifully together. It's fantastic. But unlike Little Giant, where they kind of threw Bud a couple of bones, you know, to play two parts, in this movie, they made it equal. They equaled it out. They gave Bud, first of all, a great villainous part at the beginning. He's terrific. You know, he's terrific. You hate his guts. That's how terrific he is. And then in the latter part of the film, I mean, you know, in the more modern, they wrote him a beautiful part. They wrote him comedy. They wrote him funny.
Yeah.
So they got it right with this one. And I think that's the main improvement over Little Giant. And you called it, Jerry. This one is not just a Lou Costello movie. This is a, like you say, it's an ensemble piece. Maybe Lou and Marjorie are the stars, you know, more than anyone else. But Bud has an incredible opportunity and he takes full advantage of it. And he's spitting out the pits. He's eating it all. You know, it's just... He's just fantastic. Certainly. Now, Bud, you're not going to be playing a typical role. What do you mean? Get out of here. You heard a few people during that time. But anyway, again, I just think it's as good, if not better, of any comedy team movie ever made. So, and that's saying something. So what's on your mind now, Jerry? What's on your mind? I'm really curious.
Well, I'll tell you. I've got this pair of dice sitting over here on the table. So hang on a second. Ooh. Let me shake. Throw them out.
Yeah.
Two. It's a two. So, Nick, why don't you tell me what your number two pick is?
Oh, okay. Well, I think I can do that.
I'd be thankful. I could have rolled a seven, you know, and then we would have both.
Oh! I would have to give you my number seven movie. I had enough trouble doing five. But no, seriously. Actually, I didn't have trouble at all. But okay, number two is interesting because it's kind of their number two movie, but it's actually their number three movie, In the Navy. Ah. Or I should say, Bud Abbott and Lou Costello and Dick Powell in the Navy. Mom, I want to go see Bud Abbott, Lou Costello, and Dick Powell in the Navy. I'm sorry, I missed the middle of that. What were you saying? the world's longest title.
Theater marquees weren't big enough to put all that up there.
No, this one, the marquee was hanging down, you know, on the end. It was all the way down. I love In the Navy. In the Navy is the follow-up to Buck Privates. Now, everybody loves Buck Privates better. I know that. It's the popular opinion. It has all their great routines. They're young. They're vibrant. It's the beginning, really, of supposedly their starring career. I beg to differ. I feel that there's still comedy relief in Buck Privates. Yes, they've got a lot of stuff to do. They have a lot more to do than they did in One Night in the Tropics, but they're still secondary to the plot. The plot is still the main thing. You know, you have to care about the cockamamie, you know, chauffeur with the millionaire and, you know, the pretty girl and blah, 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 blah. And then you had the Andrew sisters who are wonderful. You know, I don't fast forward through the Andrew sisters, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. But it's questionable as far as a starring film. And Jerry, like we pointed out when we went over Buck Privates, at the end, it's Alan Curtis and Lee Bowman are at the top, or Lee Bowman and Alan Curtis, and then Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Yep.
So they weren't sure. They weren't sure yet. And it shows. To me, it shows. Then they rushed In the Navy into production. They shelved Hold That Ghost, and they shot In the Navy. And this was one of the new ones for me. I'm holding up my quotation marks. When they started showing the package on the Sunday morning broadcasts in New York, I had never seen In the Navy before. You know, I was maybe 13 or 14, and it was a revelation. To me, it was their first starring film, as far as I'm concerned. And they had really big supporting players. Dick Powell was a big star, you know? Mm-hmm. Claire Dodd and Dick Foran, they were all from Warner Brothers. You know, this was, you know, major. But they were the stars, regardless of Dick Powell's, you know, hubris gravitas. In spite of that, Bud and Lou were the stars. And they went places they hadn't gone before. Lou admonishing Bud, you know, at one point, and Bud being, you know, shocked. I can't believe you're saying this to me. And then he gives him a little tap on the shoulder. Lou hits Bud. Pomeroy, you hit me. And it's like a whole dramatic moment. It's just wonderful. And you had Lou with a love interest, you know, Patty Andrews, and even the plot, even the Dick Powell, Claire Dodd romance, you know, is fun. It's a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like a screwball comedy inside an Abbott and Costello movie. And it works.
Yeah.
It works alongside them. Mm-hmm. You see that, right? It's like you know, you really get into Dick Powell's problem. He wants to be invisible. He doesn't want to be, you know, Russ Raymond anymore, the famous singer. He just wants to be a gob, you know, cleaning the decks. And Claire Dodd sneaking on the ship, you know, as the reporter, taking pictures and all that stuff. Anyway, I just think it's terrific. And I think their material is just as good as Buck Privates. Their energy level is fantastic. Shemp Howard has more to do. You know, it's just so much fun. And definitely my number two on this list. What about you, Jerry? What do you feel about In the Navy?
In the Navy. Other than the fact that that title got ruined forever for me by...
Well,
we're not talking politics.
Even prior, you know, just the song, the Village People doing that song.
Right.
Way back when it first came out, it was like, no. That's an Abbott and Costello movie. You can't do that. No.
No, imagine they did the real title, you know. But Abbott and Costello, big pal in the Navy. You know, I don't think it would quite work out rhythmically. I'm not sure.
Otherwise, yes, I am in agreement with you. Buck Privates, definitely not a starring feature for the two of them. Mm-hmm. Very much the comedic relief. A lot of comedic relief. To this day, that boxing scene is one of my all-time favorites.
Oh, yeah.
But in the Navy, yes, it was their movie.
Yes.
And you got the feeling that Dick Powell was along for the ride.
Yes.
As opposed to Buck Privates, where you felt like they were along for the ride.
And it's true. It's very true.
Yeah.
You know?
I understand the concept of them wanting to immediately do another military one, since Buck Privates mm-hmm. did such fantastic business. It was a good choice, putting them in the Navy. A lot of opportunities. I got to say, one of my all-time favorite jokes ever.
Hey, Smokey, get a load of this picture. What is the shit that these guys are working on? Look at that.
That's a hell of a ship.
You're telling me. What is this that they're working on?
Oh, look, please don't annoy me.
You're telling me. Yeah. Yeah, well, it also has, he does the little bug joke with Dick Powell. By the way, Pomeroy, where all the little bugs go in the winter? Search me. No, thanks. Just thought I'd ask. They gave it to Dick Powell.
Yes.
And he did it really well.
Also. He did.
Yeah, he really did.
Well, I've always liked Dick Powell. Yes.
Me too. I'm a Dick Powell fan. And both stages of his career, the goofy Busby Berkeley guy and mm-hmm. the Philip Marlowe tough guy, you know?
Yeah. In between those, I've got a collection of radio dramas where he shows up quite often with his detective stuff that he did. You know, it was just, yeah. Oh, anyway.
Didn't he do Richard Diamond? Wasn't he Richard Diamond? Yeah, yep. Yeah. He was great. He was great.
Yep.
And also he was the favorite Philip Marlowe over Bogart. You know what I mean? Anyway, good for you, Dick
so
Powell.
In the Navy, number two. You get two thumbs up for me on that one. That's
well,
one
you know well what? Speaking of thumbs, you know, opposable thumbs, you know, and I'm not opposed to hearing where your thumb is pointing right now as your number one Abbott and Costello film. How about that?
Wow. I felt like I just went on the scenic tour from, you know, point A to punchline. That was marvelous. Okay.
The punchline is just below the Mason-Dixon line, by the way. It's where I was raised.
If there's more than five people in the punchline, I go for the hors d'oeuvres first. You know, I just don't. I have maintained my entire life, for as long as I've been a fan of Abbott and Costello, I have always maintained that Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is a fantastic movie.
Yes.
My all-time favorite Abbott and Costello movie, however, is Whodunit.
A near perfect film.
Number one on my list, Whodunit. And, you know, let me count the ways.
Yeah.
Not the least being the supporting cast. They're all marvelous.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you got Mary Wicks. Oh, my gosh, Mary Wicks. Geez. And Lou has to romance Juliet. Just when he first starts in on that, the looks that she gives him, like, what the heck are you doing here? Then you've got William Bendix as the detective, and just just so many marvelous. I won't go into the whole cast list again. Go back to our episode on Whodunit for details. Near perfect film, darn close to perfect Abbott and Costello film.
Absolutely,
because they're it. They've got the show.
Film. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like Universal sat down and said, you know what? They can do this. Let's let them do this. Mm-hmm.
Not the least thing that they do is make fun of themselves.
I love
that. Two separate points in this movie, they reference Who's On First.
Hey, you take the check. I'll keep the radio. Oh, boy. Beautiful, too.
What's the fella's name on third base?
But what's on second?
Who's on second?
Who's on first?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go.
No.
Every time you hear those two guys, who's on first? What's on second? I don't know. That little fat guy, he killed. No good.
Come on.
Good
roll.
That little fat guy, he's no good. No.
Yeah.
Mervin Milgram.
And then, if, you know, the Watts Volts. Next thing, you'll be telling me what's on second base.
And they just threw that in, by the way. They ad-libbed all of that.
Yep.
Wasn't in the script.
And it works. Mm-hmm. And it works. Absolutely. It works beautifully.
Absolutely.
And then stupid stuff. Stupid little stuff. Like they're in the studio and the murder happens and Lou is trying to run away and he's running across the pedals of the organ and just stands there. Doing like the Charleston or something. I don't know what he was doing. Making all this noise with the organ. Oh my gosh.
He's playing it with his butt. Yeah. He's sitting in different parts of the keyboard. So he's making all this noise. It's very funny. Oh my God. It's a great movie. How about the whole finale?
I was going to say the climax of it, the electric sign that he converts into a message, you know, so well done. And then they pay it off with the end, you know?
Right. It's a very clever
end. The final shot there.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just so good. So, and it's my favorite. It is my all-time favorite. If anybody said to me, I've heard a lot about this Abbott and Costello. What movie would you recommend? That would be my first choice. It doesn't contain Who's on First. It's not Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, but still, it would be my first choice to say, watch this one.
Uh-huh. I think you're right. I think it's a perfect representation of who they are. They are both equals in it. You know, it's not like one of those movies where Bud goes away for 10 minutes. Although the telephone routine, he does. He kind of steps away.
Oh, yes.
One of my all-time favorite routines is the telephone routine. He's done it several times. He did it on the Colgate show. He did it on the film show. But it is hilarious. It's just okay. From start to finish.
On that note, they did the Susquehanna routine a couple of different places.
Yes.
Many times changing the name of the street.
Bagel Street.
Yeah. It was, you know. Mm-hmm. And so a part of me says, okay, you know, they had some issues, copyright, you know, like Joey Faye, blah, blah, blah. Maybe that was part of it. I don't know. The telephone routine, I've seen it with two different phone numbers.
Yeah.
Why change the number? You know, it's Alexander 2222 or Alexander 4444. Is one really funnier than the other? That's debatable. But still, why change the – anyway. But it is a great routine.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how they did it on the Colgate Comedy Hour with the switchboard operator right there.
Right there. You know, right, exactly.
Because in the movie, obviously, he's on the phone in the phone booth in the drugstore. And then the operator is at her station at the phone company.
Right.
But yeah, doing it live like that, you had the both of them right there. And it worked beautifully. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I love there's one point where he walks into the side of the booth. I mean, head first, he really hits it, but he breaks it during the Colgate show. It breaks. And he starts laughing. It's so funny. You know, it's just, that's why I love the Colgate show. It's just things like that going wrong.
Oh, yeah.
I have to say that in this movie, number one, the telephone thing is worth the price of admission for me. I just think it's hilarious. When he starts singing along with the opera singer lady, it is one of the beautiful Lou Costello moments of all time. It makes me laugh every time. So there's that. There's the Limburger cheese at the beginning. I mean, if you want to like convince somebody that Lou Costello is a comic genius, put on those 5 minutes of him trying to slice some Limburger cheese. It is just perfect. And I don't say that often. Perfect. Mm-hmm. And Bud, off on the side.
Hey, Chick.
What?
Tell the guy we got some nice ham sandwiches here.
The man don't want a ham sandwich.
Huh. Look, Chick. We got some lovely roast beef.
Never mind the roast beef. Get in with that Limburger cheese.
If you think I'm going to get in here with the Limburger, you're crazy!
Come on. Slice one up.
The man don't want an egg salad. It's just so funny. The combination and Lou showing up with the gas mask is just perfect. It's just perfection. I could go on and on about this movie. There's one great scene after another. And, yes, you know, no getting around it. It's one of their, maybe their best, most successful film. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It may not be, like you say, it's not Abner Costello Meets Frankenstein, which to me is sort of a special. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this one was made while Abner Costello were on the factory. You know, they were making, Universal was a factory, basically. They had a set amount of movies they made every year, and part of them were the Abner Costellos. And yeah, that's how they were made. They were like meat, like pieces of meat. So that they came up with this amazing movie in the middle of all of that, factory farming, is just miraculous to me. It made me realize, just like with Woody Allen, had he stopped and maybe made a movie once every 2 years, we would have had more memorable films from Woody Allen. You know what I mean? There are so many that I can't even think of the titles. They all blend together. And then every so often there's a gem, you know, that you can't forget. That's what Whodunit is. Whodunit is that gem amongst, you know, the regular stuff, which is great. But this, you know, you could see it shining in the distance. That's how beautiful it is. It's just wonderful. It's a gem. It's just a gem. Yeah. And you're absolutely correct in choosing this one. Wonderful.
Okay.
All right.
I've only got one thing left.
Well, really? I'm sorry for your wife.
Oh,
sorry. I thought I got away with that one. Okay.
No.
I could have said something. Well, now you can't reproduce. I've only got one. What are you, Hitler? He only had one.
And you see, you go off on these tangents, totally forgetting the fact that I'm the guy that edits these things. So, you know, I can just as easily cut all that out.
You sound like my Moyle.
An Italian Jew. Interesting. Okay.
Grew up on Long Island, please.
Yeah, there is that.
I actually grew up in a town called Massapequa, and we called it Matza Pizza.
Oh, jeez.
Because it was Jewish and Italian.
Yep. Huh? Oh, my gosh. Next time anyway, I'm on Long Island, I'll have to try to get to Matza Pizza.
Go to Phil's Pizza and tell him I sent you.
Anyway, as I was attempting to say.
Yes.
I was attempting to come up with some ingenious way of saying, hey, Nick, what's your number one choice? But since I can't seem to do that, I'll just say, hey, Nick, what's your number one choice?
I like the last way you said it. That's better. It was okay. Anyway, I had something there in place, and I realized that you had already chosen movies I would put at number one. In fact, I would probably put Whodunit as number one, although on my list in our book, The Annotated Abner Costello, the definitive story of Abner Costello's films, I put Abner Costello Meets Frankenstein. And I meant that. I think that's their greatest film. And I think it's the most special. I think it's the most influential. I think in some ways it's the funniest because you have such great contrast between the villains and the heroes, which is essential for a comedy. And not everybody knows that. Not everybody's done that. But I had to choose Abner Costello Meets Frankenstein as my number one favorite Abner Costello film. It always will be. You talk about near perfect films. It has one gag that I don't approve of, one, and everything else is perfect. So that's my near perfect review. And it was just the joke when the monster gets scared of Lou and Bella is her dubbed actually under his cape. Don't let them frighten you. It just, at the top, they had to like suspend that, you know, what we knew. Yep. Was danger, you know, complete danger. So anyway, that's my only qualm about this film. And that's something in a 90-minute film, you know, it's like, that's it. Otherwise, it looks beautiful. It plays beautifully. It moves like crazy. You could watch it again and again and again and never tire of it. There's so much going on in this movie. And if you're a monster kid like I am and like Jerry you thank the Lord for this movie.
you get to say a fond farewell to your best friends. They're, I don't know about you, Jerry, but for me, it's modern mythology are those Universal films. It's our modern mythology. Those stories, the Bram Stoker stuff with Dracula, where they took it, you know, they took his initial story and turned it into other movies. The Frankenstein saga, even The Mummy, those terrible movies. But they had the whole history. They had it was mythology. It was so these characters are very important to me. And the fact that you're putting these characters with two of my favorite comedians of all time, it's just, it's almost too much. It's almost too good. You know what I mean? So I have to say that despite the fact that there's only maybe one, possibly two of their famous routines, and believe me, they go like that, they didn't need them in this movie. They just didn't need them. So anyway, that is my number one film. Is I know it's no surprise, but Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein is my baby.
I would have been very surprised if it was not your number one. Because I know how much you love it. And again, I love it as well. Mm-hmm. And for all those reasons, it in my opinion, they set the bar to a spot where they could never get to again with the monster, Meet the Monster movies.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them came awfully close.
Oh, yeah. Mummy is very close.
Mummy is very close. Probably Invisible Man would be the next closest.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful, Invisible Man. Yeah. I think it's a really good movie. Yeah. It almost made my top five, by the way, Invisible Man.
Gosh, there's just so much in Meet Frankenstein. And again, as has been said by many people, the fact that for the most part, the monsters are treated as they should be throughout the movie. And then the point you just brought up, how gorgeous it looks. I mean, it was filmed beautifully. And you get that feel, that flavor. It reminds me of when Mel Brooks was about to start shooting Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
He insisted that it be done in black and white. There's a reason. There's a reason. It just grabs you immediately with that old monster feel and flavor.
Can I say one thing before I forget?
Go right
on
ahead.
On the whole Young Frankenstein thing, he also insisted on using Ken Strickfaden's electrical equipment that was used in the original Frankenstein. So we get to see that. It was like an old friend, you know?
Yeah. It just added so much to that feel and flavor of the film. I don't want to say nostalgia, but in essence, that's what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing, when people ask me, so Abbott and Costello, is that better than Young Frankenstein? Well, let me put it this way. When Gene Wilder approached Mel Brooks with his idea of this Young Frankenstein, Brooks' knee-jerk reaction was, comedy horror movie? Been done. Abbott and Costello, you can't do better.
Yep.
There you go.
Yeah, but he was right. You know, it's as much as Young Frankenstein is a affectionate homage, I think it's hurt because it doesn't have that. Everybody's funny in it. You know what I mean? Yep. Everybody's winking at the camera.
Yeah.
And that kind of it doesn't ruin it for me, but it makes it less than to me. Mm-hmm. Abbott and Costello faced a real threat. You know, their lives were at stake.
Yeah.
And that made the humor that much more prescient and you know, powerful as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So.
And then throwing in some of the, like one of my favorite lines from the movie when Lon Chaney Jr. says,
in a half an hour, the moon will rise and I'll turn into a wolf.
You and 20 million other guys.
Listen, I might tear you limb from limb.
One of the great jokes of all time.
Yes.
And if you've ever seen this movie with an audience, which I've seen a couple of times, that just tears the roof off. That joke. It's a great joke.
Peppering those in throughout this film, it just adds so much to it. Anyway, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. You know, that is such a special movie.
It really is.
There must be some way that we can recognize that or honor that.
You know, our next episode is number 50, which is kind of like a real, you know, something to celebrate.
Yes.
So I'm thinking maybe since you bring up Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein and we bring up a special broadcast at number 50, why don't we do a personal commentary on Lost in Alaska?
I like it. And then once that 10 minutes is over with, we can do something else.
You have 10? Oh, my goodness. I was thinking like, you know, 2.5, maybe 3, 3.25.
You know, in my opinion, if we just do the, you know, you sleep for 2 hours and then I'll sleep for 2 hours. If we just do that right. One scene, then you're done.
Oh, no, and I like the roulette scene, too.
Oh, yeah.
Or is that the roulette wheel? That's very
yes,
good.
That's a good one, too. Okay, so I guess there's something in there. But anyway.
Matthew Conium, my co-author on the annotated Abbott and Costello, the definitive book about Abbott and Costello's movies, he says in the book that there's not one movie, there's not one Abbott and Costello movie that he doesn't find at least something to recommend. And I agree with him. I don't think they ever made a movie that I'm embarrassed, you know, to look at or I wouldn't recommend or whatever. Yes, there are ones that are definitely better than others, but I think he's right. I don't think, you know, I feel the same way about Laurel and Hardy. You know, there's such wonderful moments in each of the movies, you know, that you have to admit they're really on their game and they're funny and they're whatever. Here I go. Yeah. I'm not even off the mouth. So hey, our little experiment kind of worked. Our 5 + 5 = 10. Okay, well this has been really good. You know, like I told you at the top of the podcast, I really didn't have a lot of time to do research this time around, which Jerry will tell you. I generally spend, you know, 2 or 3 days making notes. Oh, yeah. But I wanted to experiment to see if we could just wing it. We could just sit down and talk about the movies. And we've done it. We did it, Jerry.
We did. Okay. Now they can let us know if we did it well.
Yeah. Oh, now you're living dangerously. I know these people. I know them. And, you know, it's so funny. One person made a correction or some kind of correction.
Yeah.
And I just answered by saying, glad you enjoyed the podcast. Thank you. And that was it. So I didn't mention the mistake or whatever it was. But, you know, it's like, if you're going to write to us, you know, at least, boy, I enjoyed it. Or I love the podcast, but, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I just think that's a better form. We can take the criticism better if you put that little bit of sugar, you know, that spoonful of sugar. But regardless, I appreciate the corrections because, you know, sometimes I forget. And, you know, I appreciate more than anything my partner, Jerry, in this venture because you are just, you're the one. You're the one that makes it happen. And I appreciate that very much.
Thank you so much, my friend. And I throw the compliments right back at you. This whole thing really was pretty much your idea. And I feel like I'm along for the ride and enjoying every minute of it.
I don't feel that way, but I feel like you are an equal partner. And even when you're not talking as much, that people don't realize what you do. You know, the producing, the editing, making the sound right, everything you do. Mm. I do most of the research and most of the yammering. But, you know, to me, it's equal. It's equal. So take credit, thank my you. Buddy. Take credit. Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for tuning in on another Abbott and Costello Meet the Podcast. The next one is number 50, 5-0. We are officially middle-aged, and we will be doing a commentary as we all watch Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein together. Won't that be fun?
Yeah.
So everyone, have a wonderful couple of weeks. And Jerry, again, thank you so much for your time and effort and humor and skills. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for listening in. Be sure to listen to the next one because it's going to be kind of special. All right. Take care, everyone. And, you know, stay safe.
Goodbye.